Hello, my name is Amy Toy, the host of Angel Answers with Amy Toy. Besides being a radio show host, I'm also an intuitive counselor who provides spiritual insight into matters of the heart. Are you confused about your love life? Thinking of getting a new job? Wondering about your purpose and why you are here? I work very closely with not only the angelic realm, but also those who have crossed over to the other side. All sessions are strictly confidential. I also offer long-distance healing sessions using angelic energy. This angelic energy, also known as integrated energy therapy, IET, can be done through Skype or on the phone and helps you get the issues out of the tissues. For first-time clients only, I am offering a 20% discount. You can find me online on amytoyamytoy.com, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or email me at angelicamy35@gmail.com or simply call 727-514-7323. May the angels carry you through, and this is for entertainment purposes only. And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Amy Toy. I'm the host of Angel Answers with Amy Toy. I have a very special guest I'm excited to interview because we have some background in common. His name is Mark Susnow. He is a life design strategist, cutting-edge thought leader, author, inspirational speaker, and coach who inspires others to believe in themselves. Influenced by the new millennium, he transitioned from an exciting career as a successful trial lawyer, interviewed by Rolling Stone magazine, the New York Times, Boston Globe, and other major media, to what he does now, specializing in life, executive, leadership, and business coaching as the CEO of Inspire Possibility. Passionate about life being an exciting journey of discovery, he integrates what it takes to be successful in the world with the inner wisdom unfolded to him through years of yoga and meditation. Mark is also a very successful author. He has authored the acclaimed book, The Soul of Uncertainty, A Fable for Our Times. He has also authored the book, Dancing on the River, Navigating Life's Changes, and Discover the Leader Within, 10 Keys to Becoming the Leader You Want to Be. He is also the host of the celebrated Inspired Possibility podcast. Mark continues to expand his own personal life journey as a father to three, avid hiker, musician, and writer. Mark, welcome to the show. How are you doing this evening?
Well, I'm feeling the angels. I heard that music, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, the angels are here. So I'm open to receiving a message.
Okay, well, during the show, I channel stuff, so you never know what's going to come out of my mouth. Seriously. So
yeah.
You were a trial lawyer back in the day, huh? And you transitioned into
back
this
in the
work.
Day.
Yeah, it feels like it.
2000.
That was yeah, 2000,
that
huh?
Yeah. That was the year I stopped.
Huh.
The new millennium.
Uh-huh.
I just got a message with this whole idea of the new millennium, the year 2000,
mm-hmm.
it spoke to me, and I felt that there was something else that I needed to do with my life other than be a lawyer, to explore,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
I wasn't really sure what that was. And
yeah.
So I searched for that last year as a lawyer, because I said, okay, if I don't do it now, I never will, because I financially was in good shape,
mm-hmm.
although I had a young family at the time. And I remember that summer we went to Bali in 99, and our whole family, you know, my wife and three kids, and I just felt I was going there curious to hopefully I would get a message that what I was supposed to do, and
mm-hmm.
and it was an amazing experience, and it kind of validated my intuitive hunch that I needed to move on with my life, because there was always this thing you could go back.
Yeah.
And I that was kind of my safety net. I could go back. And so I remember waking up that morning of January 1st, 2000, and all of a sudden, for many, many years, when people ask you what you do and the word attorney comes out, they have a whole whole scenario about how you think and what you believe and who you are, which is not very accurate. And so that was it. I for a whole year, I really did nothing. And then I decided to the next year. I woke up on January 1st, 2001. And this was all in Kauai. We used to live in Kauai. And I called a coaching school and said, okay, I want to do this, and got on the plane with two of my kids back to San Francisco. And this guy goes, I know you. You're a lawyer. You live in Marin. You're a musician. And I met you at a storytelling workshop for lawyers.
Huh.
And I said, well, I haven't been a lawyer for a year. He goes, well, what are you doing, or what are you thinking of doing? I said, I'm thinking of becoming a life coach. And he said, well, if you do, call me. And I called him, and that started the whole thing.
Yeah, the year 2000, that's when I had my third near-death experience. And I wasn't on my purpose either. So I had a car accident that the doctors told my parents that I wasn't going to live. And
wow.
I had a near-death experience, my third one, mind you. And, yeah, that changed my life, too, 2000. That was in September of 2000. So I got back on my purpose because I was always gifted as a child. So, you know, it's interesting how sometimes we have these awakenings. And you're a life coach, and I'm a psychic intuitive healer. So I think we help people with awakening to themselves. Isn't that ironic?
Totally. Totally.
Isn't that ironic? Yeah, and you were a trial lawyer. I was a paralegal for about 7 years. And
wow.
I remember I was let go of my last job, and I was doing the psychic healing work full time. And I was doing the paralegal work, and I hated it. I hated the paralegal work. And I had to make a decision. Well, it was made for me. I was let go. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
Life kind of slammed
you
against
the
wall. Yeah, it wasn't easy, but once I got into the work, like, you know, maybe you can relate to this, it's like it just started to flow, and that's how you know when you're on purpose. It's exciting. It really is. It's kind of cool.
And it's so important to stay on purpose because sometimes in the beginning or even down the road where we worry about things or the finances or whatever or people coming to us and I just find that more than anything, I know doing the radio show, I get so much satisfaction of having the radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, getting to have the kind of conversation that we're having and starting to have. And you know, it's very soothing and stimulating and validating. And, so I've been pretty much on purpose all the time. And it keeps changing, but I think the constant is I keep evolving. No matter how old I am or I get, I keep evolving, and I'm always looking, I'm always open to the next thing.
Same here. It's quite interesting because I've gotten more into my writing. I've written fiction books, and you've written books, obviously, too, nonfiction and help books, and I've been called to write, so now this will be another chapter in my life that I'm opening up to. So, by the way, I have some messages for you. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
Yeah.
I have messages, yeah.
Okay.
You
got a message for me?
Yes, I do. A very good one. You have a lot of angelic support around you that shows up quite well in your reading. And also Archangel Michael. You're a very strong person, and I feel like angelic support from him as well. Archangel Michael is the protector and also guides our way. And he's like also, I call him the flamethrower. He kind of lights our path up. It's like, here it is.
Right. Here it is.
And here it is. Also, the next one is another interesting is self-acceptance. And that's what you talked about on how to love yourself on your site. I saw that, how to love yourself.
The video?
The video, yes. So self-acceptance, too, is one of the messages. So I find that just kind of goes with what your message is tonight. Wow.
Yeah.
And also abundance, by the way. So it looks like you're going to have another stepping stone in the next 2 years for finances as well. Just let you know.
Good.
Okay. So
I'm
that's
all
what
for
I got
that.
For you so far. Yeah, you're welcome.
I'm all for, you know, constant abundance in just in connection and love and mm-hmm. openness, and I just find that the more open I get, there's just more life that mm-hmm. life and light that comes into my life. And how's that?
Mm-hmm.
I say life and light that comes into my life. Sounds like the makings of a poem. I'm also a poet, by the way. <It's> just, yeah, life and light come into your life.
I was going to start singing Debbie Boone, "You Light Up My Life," but I'm just not going to go there. Okay.
There it is.
You don't want to hear me sing. I sound very bad. I'm just kidding. I like to be humorous. I have my angels, the cherubs with the angelic realm, make me goofy. I call on them, and I just start getting goofy in a good way, not a bad way. So let's talk about your journey, though, a little bit more. You have something new that you want to talk about, which I like. It's called Leaping, the Seven Keys to Living Your Vision. What does that mean?
Right. Well, it's what it is. It's to really look at how do you discover what your vision is and what's it like. And sometimes you don't really know you don't really have a particular vision. Mm-hmm. But you know what it would be like if you were living the vision. And so what I did was I had this idea, and I remember I was at the kitchen table one. Probably I came up with this word leaping about 10 years ago. And it's an acronym. Mm-hmm. And for what it would be like, what you would experience if you're living your vision. And so we can kind of play around with this, and I like to do this. When I do workshops, I'd always ask people, and I love acronyms. I'm a big acronym fan, right? So the L stands for how you want to lead your life. What do you stand for? What do you stand for? Mm-hmm. And the E is energy, right? Is energy, feeling energetically, what would it feel like if you're really living this life, if you're true to yourself? How would it feel energetically? And what you have to do, too, is what the A stands for is attitude. Mm-hmm. So you have to think about, I need to take a stand in terms of how I lead my life, what I stand for, what I'm committed to. You need to have the energy, which is a lot of times it's eating well, it's exercising. And you got to have the attitude, a positive attitude. And realizing that there are going to be obstacles in the way, there are going to be barriers, but you get over them, you get around them, or you climb over them. Mm-hmm. And I have a story to share with you once I finish the acronym about the obstacles and barriers. So a film I just saw yesterday. And P stands for, this is where you come in. I'm going to say, this is what I do when I do the work. So what do you think P stands for?
Purpose.
Could be purpose. And in my acronym, I think more about possibility.
Oh, okay.
Possibility. Mm-hmm. And the I can stand for integrity and inspiration. And the N is really about new thinking, new ways to look at the world, new ways to look at things. And then the G is really about having goals and to express gratitude for your life the way it is now. Mm-hmm. To have goals and at the same time to be grateful for what you have at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the acronym I came up with. And if you are in these qualities, if you live in these qualities, if you express them, then your purpose will reveal itself. Your vision for your life will reveal itself when you're living according to these principles.
That's true, because some people don't even know what their purpose is.
Yeah, and it also changes. I think that at one time in your life, what your purpose was no longer fills you up, and you're on to something else, which I think is a good thing, because
definitely.
We have to keep open to changing. And when I wrote my first book, Dancing on the River, Navigating Life Changes, change was a big word. Now I don't think in terms of somebody said to me recently, do you think people really change? And I said, you know, I used to think absolutely, but now what I think is we evolve. We keep evolving. And as we evolve, the way we see ourselves is totally different. It's change, but it's really about evolution, not change so much. It's it's a never-ending process, which is, which makes our life an adventure.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. And my father used to say, if I don't keep growing, then I'm 6 feet under. Okay.
Yeah, it's true.
You know.
Yeah.
I like
that.
Yeah,
you have to. Yeah.
Yeah. Very
definitely.
True.
And sometimes people have a comfort zone that they're stuck in, and they don't really want to adventure outside it, and they have resistance. They're resistant to changing, but what I also found is that with all of this, life is a mystery, and we think that we have these concepts and these principles, but you know, we get curveballs every once in a while, and we don't know how it's going to end up, and that's why it's important to have a certain ethics that we live by, certain standards.
Explain that a little bit more. What certain ethics or standards would people maybe need to glean from themselves?
Values. Yeah, values. We have to have certain values. And what we, again, about what we stand for.
Right.
And to really stick with them and to sometimes, let's say we're in integrity and we see people around us out of integrity, yet they seem to be getting ahead. But not to lose sight, not to lose sight of our internal compass. And we all have an internal compass that kind of is our guide, and it kind of guides us to stick to our values, to continue to be who we are.
Yep, that's very true. And I get those, you know, a lot of clients say, well, so-and-so's getting ahead, and this one's getting ahead. I said, what are you doing? What are you doing to live your life? To hell with them. People don't like when I speak that way, but it's the truth.
Yeah,
And
right now, I mean, in our government, we're seeing that. I've never seen a president like this.
I know.
Whose values are all about getting ahead, about power, and he thinks nothing of demeaning people, and it's. But we go, well, wait a minute. Here's this guy. He's got all this. What about us? And I think it's important to realize, what do I stand for?
Right.
What's important to me?
Right, and it doesn't matter what government does, your boss does, or your best friend. You have to do what's right for you. And if their ethics or standards are not going with what you are internally, then you have to shut that door.
Yeah, you have to keep asking yourself, what am I really living true to my value?
Right. To thine own self be true. And I say that a lot.
There you go.
There we go. To thine own self be true. So I'm the kind of person, as you are, if I don't do what's right for myself, I feel it. Internally, and I have that.
Yeah,
conflict.
I do too.
And I would rather be.
Yeah, I have like a. Yeah, I do. I feel like a sometimes a tension in my body.
Right, and I have to be in alignment with that. If I'm not in alignment with myself, then I have to look at what is my motives. And some people don't want to look at themselves. And maybe as a life coach, you've experienced that with your clients.
Oh yeah. People have a shadow side that they don't want to look at, or something they're afraid of. If they find out the answer, they might go, oh my God, what am I going to do now? Or I don't really like myself. But what I do is try to get people to see what's really true. And once you see what's really true, you're not afraid of it.
Right.
But until you really go deeper and really ask yourself what is really true here, then once you do that, there's no longer this fear. But so often we fear the unknown, And what we do is we make this unknown into something awful. I think the expression is awfulize it. Psychologist yeah. friend of mine, he has a term he used, well, awfulize mm-hmm. the future, the mm-hmm. the uncertainty, the unknown. Mm-hmm. And sometimes in when we really, in other words, we're sometimes stuck because we don't want to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so we don't make a decision. We don't change our career. We don't really change our relationships. And we stay stuck in a toxic career or a toxic relationship because we're really afraid to what's next, to discover what's next.
Mm-hmm. But once you dig, I call it digging underneath the ruins, getting beneath the city and finding out what's really going on. When you're an archaeological dig, you go underneath the city and you get dig those ruins and you go underneath things. And sometimes you discover the most beautiful things beneath that city.
Yeah.
And you have to do that to get to what's really there, the core of self.
It is. And when you discover your core self, you find something amazing. What's interesting is that when I first got into meditation, the metaphor they used was kind of diving deeper into consciousness from the external world to the internal world. And another way to look at that is I don't know if you've ever gone scuba diving.
Mm-mm,
but
not yet.
If you have, you could be in the water. When you get in the water, it can be very choppy.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, as you dive deeper, and you go deeper and deeper, there's a whole other world of color, of life, of calmness. It's just like a whole different experience, and because you've gone deeper, and in this deeper experience, the deeper level of the ocean, and you think of consciousness as the ocean, we experience this stillness. This amazing stillness, and that's what happens when we go deeper into our experience, and also in our own journey, ask ourselves these questions that we think can be very painful, but on the other side, they're very liberating.
Yes, they are. I mean, I did my own digging of the ruins years ago, and I still do that, but it's when you really get into the basement of the house or underneath the city, it's not so bad. It's really not that bad. It's actually very, not liberating, freeing, but also helps you understand yourself better. And that's what we're
going
to do.
Well, you know, I remember the video that you referred to, like getting to know Mark.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what to call it, but it's really, it could be loving yourself, really. And it's this idea of, and it's amazing how things come to you, because I had hired somebody to do a video for my website
mm-hmm.
and about the work I do, and I didn't like it. It just didn't feel right. It didn't feel like it was really me. I felt kind of stiff. So I had him do it again. A few months later, we did it again. It was a little better, but I still had the same feeling. It really didn't capture really what I was trying to convey. And then I remember I was at a conference, and somebody was videoing people as they exited this one talk. And I said, "Hey, can I be videoed?" And she goes, "Sure." And I said, What are you talking about?" She said, "Oh, we're just da-da-da-da-da." So she asked me a question, and I went on, and it was the best video I've ever done. It was so spontaneous, and it was short, unrehearsed, and I love it. And what I remember is that what people really liked and laughed, and I laughed, is that when you're going through a rough patch, rough time, to look in the mirror at yourself and smile, and you go, "I got you, babe. I got you, babe." And every time I would do that, I'd laugh, and that's what came out on the video. Everybody started cracking up. I did, too. And if you do that, it just lightens you up.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Having a
sense of
humor.
Babe.
Yep. Having a sense of humor is the best way to do it. I think sometimes that gets you through a lot if you have a sense of humor or you can do stuff like that. Helps lighten the load.
Yeah.
I love it. That's great. An interesting point you made on that video, too, which I sometimes think to myself, how we talk to ourselves. What's your opinion on that? As humans, we talk to our inner critic.
You know what? Yeah. It's so important. The inner critic, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, normally what worry is imagination, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagining the worst case scenario. And that's what we do to ourselves. We beat ourselves up. Mm. That's that inner voice, that voice of judgment, that what I call your VOJ, that says, why did you do that? You shouldn't have said that. Who do you think you are? Mm-hmm. And that's going all the time. And what people hate that voice. And so what I've discovered is, don't try to silence that voice by arguing with it. What you do is you recognize it. You become the observer. Because when you mm-hmm. become the observer, you're not attached to it. But if you argue with it, you get attached. But you just, what I suggest is you give it a name. You give your observer a name. So I call, your voice of judgment a name. So I call mine Ralph. And I hear that voice, and also, it's in my first book, Dancing on the River, I talk about the disguises of that voice of judgment, how it shows up in unexpected ways. And you say to you just say, okay, I hear you. But you don't try to talk them out of it. You just say, I hear you. Because when you do that and you notice that quality, that voice, mm-hmm. you're not attached to it. You become, again, the witness, the observer. And you just move on.
Mm-hmm.
Just like a cloud. You see a cloud, and you watch. I don't know if you've ever, I used to, a lot of times in Hawaii, we just sit outside, we watch clouds.
Mm-hmm.
And you watch the cloud, and wow, it's gone, the sun's out, the sun is shining. Now the cloud comes, you can't see the sun, right? It's dark. Cloud disappears, the sun is out again.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's that idea of seeing these negative thoughts, just like clouds moving on. But once you start arguing with it and start believing it, you get attached to it.
Yes.
So it's a matter of letting go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. Yeah, and I live in Florida, so we get those rain showers and the clouds, and then the sun comes out. That's a good analogy.
Is that where you're calling from? Is that where you are now, Florida?
Yes, I'm in Florida. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I moved.
What part of Florida?
I'm in near Tampa. Funny thing is, about 5 years ago, my father had passed away, and I got nudgings to come down here. I'm from New York, Buffalo, New York, to be exact. And it's interesting. I was so fearful, but I was ready for a change, and I'm so glad I did. My life has changed so drastically from where I was 5 years ago.
Yeah. From Buffalo to Florida, just the weather.
Yes.
The weather.
I don't want to kill people now. I have that seasonal adverse affective disorder where the lack of sunlight really got to me in my later years.
Uh-huh.
So I've moved to Florida because I love the heat, because I lived down, my aunt and uncle lived here all their lives, and I moved, I came down here when I was 9. So I fell in love with Florida.
Oh.
I was just like, after I turned a certain age, I'm like, I'm moving, and I did. I was very grateful that I was led down here.
Yeah. Well, I've been on the West Coast most of my life.
Okay.
My whole life, really. I've
mm-hmm.
lived in the Bay Area, then Hawaii.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't made it out there yet, but I've been told to travel out that way. Like, okay, I'll do it.
But, having a vision, I remember how I used to live in Marin. As a kid, I always wanted to live in Marin. And I always wanted to have a dog. And a college friend, when I finished school, college friend gave me a dog.
Hmm.
And he was raising these sheep, old English sheepdogs, gave me a dog,
okay.
And I got evicted from the city. And my mom said, you always wanted to have a dog if you want to keep the dog. You always wanted to live in Marin. You might as well just look in Marin if you got to find a new place. So that's what I did. I looked in Marin, and I've been here ever since. And then I used to meet these people that would be coming back from Hawaii, and I'm figuring out, how do they do this? How are they able to go to Hawaii all the time? And I'm stuck here. And then my girlfriend at the time turned me on to backpacking. And we used to go in the Trinity Alps in California, way up in the northern part of California. And so she turned me on to backpacking. And then one day I met this man who just came back from hiking the Kalau Trail in Kauai. So here I had this idea of how do these people go to Hawaii? Plus the paying for it and everything like that.
Yeah.
And so this guy came back from backpacking, told me about the Kalau hike, and I said to my girlfriend, who had just turned me on a backpack, I said, let's go to Kauai. So that's what we did. We went backpacking for 3 weeks, these huge packs. She knew how to get everything out of these packs, and off we went to Kauai to hike the Kalau Trail. But ironically, we hiked part of the trail, and she was an avid backpacker. She freaked out on the trail. So we had to turn around from the first beachhead, go back to the trailhead, hitchhike into a town where we could take a boat called the Zodiac that dropped us off in Kalau. So that was my first, the first time with the hike the Kalau Trail and get into Kalau, but I didn't do it. But it planted the seed.
Mm-hmm.
So it planted the seed, and then 4 years later I went back and then started going back with my family and eventually started living there.
Wow.
But sometimes you do things, it doesn't work out maybe the way you want it, but it planted a seed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my aunt and uncle lived here and on the other coast, West Palm Beach, and I'm like, I love it down here. This is like home to me, and I would go back up to Buffalo and want to slit my wrist because of the weather. Seriously, I could not deal with the cold and the grayness. That's what got to me. And then as my father was passing away, he was sick for 2 years. I remember him saying to me, he goes, I know you're not happy here. You need to move on. And that's what he told me. He goes, get the heck out of here. He goes, I wish I did.
Out of Buffalo, you mean?
Out of Buffalo, yep.
Yeah.
And he goes, you're not happy here. He goes, he wasn't happy there either. Looking at my father's life, sometimes you can look at people's lives, I've noticed, and you can say, I don't want to be like them. He would talk about moving here, moving there, getting away from this or doing that, and he never did it. And I thought to myself, I want to do that. I'm going to move to Florida. If I don't like it, I can always move somewhere else. But I knew I had to get out of New York. I just knew it. It was like I just didn't want to be there anymore. I didn't belong there. I knew I couldn't go back. Sometimes you have this path that you know you just can't go back, but that uncertainty, as you talked about, you just don't know what the future is, but you just know what you don't want anymore. And that's part of the vision, I'm sure.
And sometimes you just have to take a leap of faith.
Yes. Yep. Yeah, and I'm glad.
That's kind of what I did with my career change, because I had family, and I at some deep level, I just felt that I could make it work, and I kind of miscalculated some things that totally with the markets at that time, financial market totally crashed in 2000. And again, I had a lot of responsibility, but I still managed okay, and figured it out. And it's now 18, 19 years later, I'm still figuring it out. That's the thing. You never totally figure it out because we're always in this flow. And I think the real gift is to be comfortable with that flow. Flowing, dancing, as I describe it, the first title of my book, or the first book, is dancing, be able to dance on the river and flow with what is, rather than resisting the way the current's going, to flow with what is. and to be open to receiving and mm-hmm. And listening and to the gifts that are around you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was true when I was that paralegal and was let go from that job in 08, and here I was doing the psychic healing work. You know, I had two full-time jobs. I had to make a choice. And when you resist change, sometimes it's made for you. I was so afraid to go on my own. I was so afraid to be my own business owner, you know, making my own money, not having someone sign my paycheck and take the taxes out or whatever. And I was so afraid of that, but I realized I made more money being on my own than, you know, working overtime as a paralegal and hating it, absolutely hating it.
Right. Well, I would say this. I didn't hate being a lawyer. I kind of liked parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
But what I found was that there was a different experience that of life that I wanted that I wasn't
mm-hmm.
getting.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, again, the year 2000 had so much symbolism and mystique to it that I kind of think, had it been some other year, I wouldn't have made the change.
Mm-hmm.
Had it been like, you know, 1990 or whatever, or you know, or 19, or I wouldn't have been motivated to make change. It had so much mystique and mystery that it definitely, you know, you don't know for sure, but it had a lot to do with it. I know. It seems so historic. The year 2000 years. And 2,000 years ago, you know, that there's, again, how the whole world, things changed. It was so, again, so symbolic. And were we in, again, to this same kind of historic change that would change mm-hmm. the world? You know, we don't know. We don't know.
No, we don't. And like I said, I had my third near-death experience September of 2000, and I remember I was thinking about this the other day, September 11th, 2001. And I was going to different meditation groups and not knowing my mediumship gifts at the time and helping those who perished in September 11th doing groups and helping them cross over. That was an honor. And if I had not had the near-death experience in 2000, I don't think I would have been open to that in 2001.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it made you more open, more compassionate, more...
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did. I thought of that the other day. I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't have been open to that because before I had kind of shut down things and was very closed off, and that experiences sometimes blow open the windows, I think, for us, literally, where we wouldn't be looking out the window, or it just blows it open for me. So I just thought about that. That just came to me. But, yeah, like you said, yours was 2000. Mine was September 11th when I really thought about, oh, wow, I can do this work. This is cool. I can help people.
Yeah.
I can help people cross over who I lost. Draining, mind you, draining work, but it was worth it. So.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I would think it would be draining.
It was, but it was fulfilling, too. It was very, like you said, that experience. You have a different experience and a different perspective. And I think for our listeners today, opening our, you know, just being open to different experiences will help open your life and maybe possibilities you never thought of.
Yeah.
Or dreamt.
And that's what I said. A lot of people kind of poo-poo possibilities because they think, well, that's kind of unrealistic. A lot of people sabotage themselves in a way when they say that's unrealistic or, well, you don't understand. Because I think that they don't understand really how these thoughts limit them, these
mm-hmm.
limiting beliefs. And you just don't know. I think that's the thing I've learned over and over again. You just don't know who you're going to meet
mm-hmm.
and how your life's going to work out. But in terms of who you're going to meet, there's people walk into your life and they become a lifelong friend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or you can meet somebody tomorrow and fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
Or meet a key client in your business. I mean, but I think the main thing is to keep growing and to keep laughing. I just and smiling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and sometimes the past is a teacher too. And I think back, oh my, I was like this, and my life has totally done a 360 or 180 or whatever. And it's amazing. I'm amazed. I'm like, wow, look at how far. Or my clients too have been with me off and on. Like, wow, they've come a long way. They've really opened up, and I've helped them on their path. And I feel, you probably feel that way too, don't you, when certain clients come?
Yes. Oh, yeah, especially the people that I've worked with for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally transform. Not everybody does, but
right.
The ones that do, it's amazing to share this with them. And some people I've worked with from the very beginning now of starting this journey, and it's so rewarding to kind of see who they've become.
Exactly.
And I kind of told them all along what I saw in them. Because people don't really see what's possible for them. And that's really what I do. And I can kind of see how I see them. And it's not how they see themselves.
No.
And I have to remind them that, listen, this is how I see you. This was my impression of you when I first met you. Totally different than their impression.
Yes.
And I keep reminding of that, and I said, look, I've been doing this for a while now, and you know, plus I was, picked a lot of juries, and I've always felt I could read people really well.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you're just, you have no idea who you can become, and
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of part of the work I do. And no matter who I've worked with, no matter how successful they are, how charismatic or attractive, they all have that voice that I'm not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
That inner critic, and I think that's underlying it all. This or that or this, it's the underlying message is I'm not good enough.
But you are. You know, I have my clients that will say to me, Amy, I can't do this or I don't want to do that, and I'm saying, who says you can't? Only yourself. They just kind of silent on the phone.
Right.
They pause, and they're like, really? They never think of it.
Who said, you know what?
Yeah.
There. It reminds me, I think I said there was something I wanted to share with you earlier.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I heard about a man who hiked the third highest peak in California in a wheelchair. He had onset diabetes, and I saw a trailer for a documentary about him. So I invited him to be my guest on the show. And yesterday, that movie was playing in Marin. So I wanted to see the movie and to meet him. So I did. And I write a monthly newsletter that your listeners can sign up on my website at inspirepossibility.com. And the newsletter I call Letters on Life. And I was in the process of writing about this man and how inspiring he is. And I watched the film, and he literally, going up this peak, had to get off his wheelchair and pull his wheelchair over the rocks and literally pull himself up over the rocks at certain spots. And the trail at the widest points was only about 36 inches. And he had his insulin pump with him. He always would check his glucose levels, and just to see that experience and how determined he was, because he was an avid hiker before he came on before he's afflicted with onset juvenile diabetes, and just to see his courage and his vision. And what was amazing was when I met him, I happened to get there a few minutes before the movie started, and he was outside talking to a few people in his wheelchair. And I said, Bob, I said, I'm Mark Susnell. I had you on my show. And it was just, he was such an upbeat person. It was totally amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of, he inspired me to really, he didn't think about his disability. He thought about what he wanted, what his vision was. And his vision was to climb these peaks so he could be out in nature and just see these incredible views and hear the coyotes and the birds and all these animals that live at 12 or 13 or 14 or 15,000 empathy to be there to experience that oneness with them. And it was such an incredible moment to be there. And so today I started listening to the interview that I did with him, which was a while ago, to kind of get some ideas for the article I'm writing. And it was just this idea of don't let the obstacles, I think what it was, what they, don't let the obstacles get in your way. And these were real obstacles. These were rocks. And some of them were almost like boulders. And he didn't let them get in the way. He just he went over them. And the first few times he wasn't able to get to the top, because it took him maybe probably an avid hiker could in 3 days get to the summit. And for him, he could only do like a mile in a day. And then as he and the first few times he had he got altitude sickness, and so he had to prepare to help him prepare for the altitude sickness, and he had to develop upper body strength to kind of propel the chair up the mountain. So it was an amazing experience, but it really reminded me how there's always going to be barriers in the way, but you know what? You can work over them. You can work around them.
And you can, and the barriers are sometimes other people telling you you can't do something.
Yeah.
And listening to your inner voice sometimes, I mean, I know I had to do this in my personal life, listening to my inner voice and saying, no, I know what I need to do here. I have to follow what I'm feeling and what I'm in alignment with. And sometimes it's hard for people to understand, but they're my best friend, or there may be some in your family, too, that do that. And sometimes you just
a lot of times they're the ones to do that.
Yes, I know. I have I used to call them the peanut gallery, and I'm like, you guys are crazy. I'm going away.
yeah.
And I did.
The peanut gallery, you said?
Yeah, the peanut gallery. Yeah, that's what I used to call them, and I have separated myself from certain individuals in my family because of that, and I'm a lot happier.
Yeah.
I'm more fulfilled.
Yeah.
And there's no shame in doing that. Sometimes our greatest teachers are ones we are our worst critics. At least that's what I feel. So.
Mhm. Which is usually ourselves.
Yes. Yep.
Mhm. We're our own worst critic. But you know the other thing about separating yourself from certain people in your life, I think at times you have to do that. You have to really look at, you know, when sometimes you meet somebody and you're at a certain place in your life, and in a way you're kind of, you develop a relationship based on that experience. Could be 20 years ago. But in the meantime, you've moved on, you've changed, and sometimes that person hasn't really changed.
No.
Like you have, and in fact, you might even find them kind of boring. And and give yourself permission to just move on and realize that there's no longer this mutuality. It's this experience that you shared maybe 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But today, there's really no mutuality. There's no reason to still to be in someone's life. Doesn't mean you hate them, but just to realize that you need to move on and to meet new people where you are now, because they're going to relate to you differently. Where this other person going to relate to the way you were 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah. I just, about a year ago, I left a relationship like that, and he'll still contact me, and he's like, but you used to be this way, and you used to be that way, and I'm like, yeah, but I've kind of outgrown you, and I've moved on. We are not the same people.
Right.
And,
yeah.
You know.
No one likes to hear that, though. I've outgrown.
I know.
Wasn't there a better way of saying that?
You try to, and they just don't get the hint, so sometimes you have to be brutally honest. Because I grew up in a family where everything, you know, which is probably a lot of dysfunctional families, we don't speak the truth. You just superficial, and you keep it under the rug.
Uh-huh.
And as a child, I would speak my truth, and my mother would just cringe. What is coming out of Amy's mouth now?
Right. You didn't yell or anything like that?
No, it wasn't that. It was just, I would just speak it. I would just say whatever I thought.
Uh-huh.
Had no filter.
Uh-huh.
a little child, yeah. And my mother would be like, oh, my God, is this my child?
Little children don't have filters. That's what's beautiful about them.
Yes, and sometimes, though, the inner critic could be things you grew up with. Those thought patterns, that's another thing, overcoming what is yours, and what is theirs, especially in a family unit.
You know, we get those thought patterns, those limiting beliefs from our parents.
Oh, yes.
And there are these, we adopt them to kind of try to win their love in a crazy way. And they got their limiting beliefs from their parents.
Yep.
And at some, but what happens is we're not aware of what these limiting beliefs are.
No.
And what these patterns are. They're unconscious. And so the only way to really discover them is you have to do a lot of inner work to really discover what these are. And what happens is until you discover them, you keep attracting people in your life that have these same limiting beliefs, and they act towards you the way your parents did. Mm-hmm. And it's only when you awaken to who you really are and realize you're not your patterns, but until you discover what they are, you can't get free of them because most of them are unconscious.
Exactly. And, you know, my personal journey, I had to look at all these patterns, and I'd be like, oh, are these, you know, all these thought forms and that, and I would joke around with some of my friends. I said, it's going to take most of my adulthood to get over my childhood and disabuse myself.
That's a good one.
Yes. Disabuse myself of all this stuff.
I like that.
Yeah. You know. And
spend the rest of my life trying to get over my childhood.
Yeah,
A lot of people do. And you know what they do? They carry around the anger from their childhood.
They do.
The anger for their parents and for life, that life wasn't fair. And at some point, I think waking up, I'm thinking of this in a different way, like awakening is really awakening to realize you're not your patterns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that's not, you're a spiritual being
that
has a certain kind of negative reinforcement that you're not really aware of how it affects you today. But once you free yourself and become aware of those negative patterns, then you can really tune into your core, to your real spiritual being, and kind of be receptive to the angels that are there. It's interesting, when I was invited to be on your show, I was thinking, well, what do I think about angels? I was really thinking about it, you know, like, well, what are we going to talk about? But in my new book, The Soul of Uncertainty, there's, and by the way, that's fiction, Soul of Uncertainty. It's actually like a spiritual novel, a little bit like The Alchemist or The Celestine Prophecy. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking about, there's one part where I talk about angels in our midst. And I think of how people in our lives are angels, certain people. They just have that quality of love and service. And I think those are really, in life, the real angels, the ones that serve other people, kind of like what you did when you were serving people that were passing over, and people that are there during this moment. And I think those are the real angels. And if you look around, they're around, and you just have to let them in. I remember when my kids went to an alternative kind of school, and there's one kindergarten teacher, it was a Waldorf kind of school. She still sends all her former kindergarten kids birthday cards. I'm talking like 20 years later. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how she has so much love for these children.
Wow. That's awesome. Yeah, and you can just one act of kindness sometimes can brighten someone's day or even their lifetime. Just one act of kindness. It doesn't matter if you're holding open the door for somebody that day. Just random acts of kindness. People think, oh, Amy, here you go on your soapbox again. But it's so true. It sounds like that lady is great. That's awesome.
She just did it all the time. I mean, that's just...
Yeah.
who she was. But that's a good reminder. Thank you for that, too. This one act of kindness during our day, just to, you know, to towards somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Not just your pet. Pet, you're going to do that.
Yeah, I know.
Somebody else. Somebody else.
Yeah, five for kids here that are just like, pet me, mommy. Yes, I get
it.
I know.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, Mark, we're running out of time. I'd love to have you on again. I really would. This was an awesome conversation. I'd love to have you on again.
Thank you. I'd love to be on your show again, and I enjoyed our conversation. And
yeah, where can people find you this is only a snippet of what
people
you can offer.
Yeah, people, my website, people can contact me. Just go to my website. It's all one word, inspirepossibility.com. And you can find out about my coaching services there. And if people are really serious about making changes in their life, I give people a 40-minute phone consult to really explore with me if it's a good fit, because sometimes it's not always a good fit. And you can find out about my books, about the speaking that I do, and sign up for my newsletter. Every month I write something inspiring, and at least most people find it's inspiring, and you sign up for my newsletter, and also when you do, you get one of my free e-books. And I know that I believe now there's a e-book that you get when you sign up for the newsletter called Stepping Stones to Freedom.
Cool.
Stepping Stones to Inner Freedom is the book that you can get if you sign up for the newsletter now.
Well, thank you.
And I reread it every once in a while. I go, you know, that's good. Because I wrote that when I first started this journey. And I went, wow, that's pretty good. And
awesome.
So I like to share that with people. And so, again, thank you, Amy, for the invitation in the conversation. And I hope that we continue this.
Definitely, Mark. Well, everyone... thank you. And by the way, they want you to say you're an angel in disguise, too.
Ah.
You're an angel in disguise, too. That's what they won't let me off the air until I said that to you. those messages come through and they're not...
All right.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you, Mark.
I get that. Thank you, Amy.
And ladies and gentlemen, thank you for a wonderful... night. It was a pleasure, and may the angels carry you through. This is Amy Toy falling for Angel Answers with Amy Toy.